On this episode of Still Loading, Tales from the Island. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the Still Loading Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Koval, and today on the show, I'm trying something new. It's been almost a year ago now, I did an episode on video game history, and I talked about how there's three main pillars of video game history: physical preservation, digital preservation, and contextual preservation. And I'm not going to go into all of those, the nuances of all that again now, but just for a quick refresh, physical is the physical copies of games, the physical manifestation of a game, you know, your cartridges, your discs, whatnot. Digital preservation is either digital copies of games or the source code, preserving the source code for other people to see. And this could be scans of video game covers or posters and whatnot, that kind of thing. But contextual preservation is a lot harder to pinpoint. And what I'm doing today and what this is, maybe it'll turn into a series, we'll see. It depends on how many people I can get on, but I'm starting a series called, that I'm calling Tales from the Island, and the idea is I'm trying to preserve the contextual history of Animal Crossing New Horizons from last year in 2020, because 2020 was the year from hell. Everyone knows this. It was a tough year for so many people. And Animal Crossing New Horizons came along at the right point and at the right time. And it really, at least from my viewpoint, it helped a lot of people get through a very tough year. And joining me today to talk about it and to share his experience with Animal Crossing New Horizons and just some of the experiences he had last year surrounding the game is Twitch streamer Oh Hey It's David. David, how are you doing today?
I'm doing quite fine today.
That's good to hear. That's good to hear. Thank you so much for coming on again. I know I said it a bunch of times in emails and before this, but seriously, thank you. So for people who don't know you, or I mean, you're a very popular Twitch streamer, but there's so many content creators out there now. It's easy for creators to fall through the cracks. So tell the listeners who you are, what you do, and kind of like how you got into streaming in the first place.
Well, hello again. My name is David. Twitch handle OHDavid. I am a variety streamer on Twitch. I stream a variety of different things, but what really got me started into streaming in Twitch was Monster Hunter. I stream a lot of Monster Hunter. And so streaming that game, I love grindy games, and when it comes to grindy games, Monster Hunter is probably one of those kinds of games that everyone yeah. knows. And so I pretty much played that for a lot of it, and recently started like getting into more variety stuff, and it's been a lot of fun.
That is good to hear, because I've always heard variety streaming is hard to build a following in, and it seems that you have defied the odds with that then, unless maybe it's different from what I remember, but I always heard that it was hard to build a following with variety streaming. Is that correct?
It's definitely very difficult. Jumping from game to game to game, different communities coming into your stream, some wanting to watch specifically what you were playing last time versus, oh man, you're playing this game, all right, I guess I'll watch. It's very difficult, but you know, it's something that I've addressed on my own channel. Is like, I very much would like to play the games I would want to play rather than one game stuck there forever, you know.
I'm with you on that. I couldn't do it either. I'm actually amazed I even hit affiliate by just playing even games that no one talks about anymore. I actually, the game that really pushed me forward was Borderlands 2 of everything, of all things.
Oh, a classic.
It's a good game, but it was kind of like, it's not on the tip of everyone's tongue, you know? So it was kind of strange. But so with Animal Crossing New Horizons, that game, it came out on March 20th, 2020. So it's been over a year now. Was this your first Animal Crossing game, or did you play others before this?
This was actually, I've played every previous Animal Crossing game at this point, and this was probably one of my most anticipated games to play for 2020. So I was pretty much looking forward to playing New Horizons.
Now, how does it stack up to the previous entries? Is it your favorite in the series, or do you have a different favorite?
Definitely my favorite, mainly because of how new it is, all the new features they've added, or, well, quote-unquote features they've added. But really, what really brought New Horizons to my attention was the fact that your island could be edited in a way, in a specific way. So that's pretty much why it's my favorite.
It was the first one, if I remember correctly, it's the first one that you could actually edit the terrain and layout of your island, right? Like you could, like in the previous entries, you had a village and there was very little you could do to make, to change the look and feel of the village, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
My sister-in-law has, what's the one for DS? Is it Wild World?
That's Wild World or New Leaf.
It's Wild World because it wasn't 3DS.
Okay, so it was just, yeah, Wild World.
So it was Wild World. And even that, like when New Horizons came out and everyone was playing and it was like, what's crazy to me about New Horizons is that most games in terms of the hype cycle and the and how it is, it remains in the public conscience and the zeitgeist, you're looking at usually like 1 to 2 months, if that. And in especially now because everything moves so fast, but with how with what 2020 was, that game, I mean, I would say it like stayed on the public, like, you know, it was on the tip of everyone's tongues up until like probably Christmas time. Like there was just constantly, there was always new stuff coming out for it. And Nintendo helped with that by releasing so many different updates. But she was playing Wild World in like, because she could not play this. It was like months after it's released and people were still talking about it, and she was just showing me some of the stuff she did in Wild World. But I haven't played that one, so I've heard it's good though. Is that one of the better ones?
Personally, Wild World for me was also one that I played a lot of.
Okay.
Next to New Leaf, but I didn't, weirdly enough, although New Leaf was newer, I didn't play much of it, mainly because at the time, I guess 3DS for me, it was not my popular console to play. But Wild World, I did play a lot of, and I have very like fond memories playing it with my cousins and friends and whatnot. So it's definitely up there in one of my favorites.
I will have to give it a shot then, because for me, New Horizons was my first Animal Crossing. I had never played one at all before. I'd actually watched friends play the original one on GameCube before. Now that's stupid expensive. But collecting, man, it's a curse.
Hey, it's sometimes it's great, sometimes it's not.
you can see it on my video now. Like I collect a decent amount, and I don't, like, I can't picture how much it is right now. Because GameCube, especially right now, 2020 did a number on the collector's market. Like everything shot up in price. GameCube specifically, for some reason, GameCube out of all of them.
I myself have been trying to get a GameCube too, just to stream GameCube games.
Do you not have one at the moment?
No, I do not.
Oh, really? I mean, you could probably find one. I don't know where exactly you live out west, but like, I'm sure there's a retro game store somewhere out there you could go to if you don't want to risk eBay or some other online retailer.
Yeah.
But anyway, so let's talk about New Horizons now. We kind of got a little bit of background about you and your Animal Crossing history. So what the reason I have you on in the first place is because I follow Xwater and some of the other Warp World guys, and they participated in your actually, was Xwater in your Ninja Warrior?
Yes,
okay, he was. I only saw Pooh's runs. But a lot of the Warboard guys participated in your American, or I guess Animal Crossing Ninja Warrior series. And you decked out your whole island in the form of a Ninja Warrior setup, like a Ninja Warrior obstacle course. So just talk about that. Like, how did the idea come to you? How difficult was it to design? How long did it take you to make everything? Just kind of dive into it.
So this idea of Ninja Warrior came about while everybody pretty much was building mini games on their islands. You know, we had Deal or No Deal by Xwater, which was pretty much Deal or No Deal.
he didn't want to get sued.
There was we had like a bunch of like casinos. People were setting up like battleships and all these crazy like just mini games on their islands. And the one thing that kind of stood out to me was the ability to travel from place to place in Animal Crossing New Horizons went up from just, hey, I'm just going to run over there. I can actually just jump over this gap. Oh, I can just pole vault over this. Mm-hmm. And so from stemming from that, I was like, you know, what if somebody just made like an obstacle course? And so I was like, okay, cool. Well, I like Ninja Warrior a lot. I watched a lot of Ninja Warrior growing up. So let's make Ninja Warrior. And so that's pretty much how the idea came about. As for designing courses and doing all of that, luckily enough, I had lots of experience building stuff and maintaining hours and hours upon doing this in Mario Maker. So it definitely was really easy to try and just lose time just mindlessly building a course and doing all of that. But it was a lot of fun. And pretty much I would ask people to come in, sign up, do the course, and, you know, they would compete and get a set of time, fast time.
So what was your approach to designing them then? Because watching some of the playthroughs of it, or the VODs, you have them up on your YouTube channel as well. It was super creative what you decided to do, like just dodging through tires, or like, you know, sidestepping through tires for that kind of thing. Even using the sitting down on a tire and then rotating around as like a simple mechanic, I thought was like super unique. So like what kind of went into it to design each of the levels? Like, how did you approach designing it?
So at first it was all new to me. So learning about new techniques, new things that people could use to travel. I pretty much did that week by week. I would be like, oh, okay. I didn't know this jump was possible. I'm going to add this jump to the next course. Okay, this is how far you can take a pole vault diagonally, because you can sometimes diagonally pole vault across, bypassing like possibly a wall or such. So it was like a matter of just like learning as I go, basically. And so taking all that I learned kind of went down to when we got to the final stretch of the season. And I had like that huge, just entire island wide course that everybody ran. I think the course took like 4 or 5 minutes to do at that point. So
that's such a long run.
By yourself, it took that long. But the special for that was it was a free for all, and I had them all go at the same time. And so they were the only reason it took so long was because they were starting to screw each other over by stopping in places, because you could body block people. At that point, the time didn't matter. It was the first one to hit the button at the end. So
that's like what is it? I loved watching this wasn't yours, but the Survivor Island one, and how everyone tried to just go against Jakku because they knew he was going to strategize against them.
Oh yes, everyone knew.
Everyone knew. He didn't make it. He didn't make it far. Wait, did he win or did he not? No. I can't remember now.
He didn't. He didn't win.
No, I couldn't.
No, wait.
So there was one thing he participated in that everyone left alone, and then he ended up winning.
No, it was Survivor.
He won Survivor. It's been a year.
It's been a while. I sometimes forget that because he betrayed me in that series, so that's probably why I don't remember. It's probably why I don't remember, but it's okay.
You just have to you block out those sensitive memories. Oh my goodness, that's awesome though. So yeah, so you ran this thing for, it was 3 rounds of it, correct? Like you whittled it down. There was what, 32 players at one time? Not all at once, because you can only have 8 on an island at and thank God it's not 32. With that, can we just talk about, this isn't anything to do with you, but Nintendo's stupid with Animal Crossing New Horizons, the way that players have to get on the island and off the island is the most obnoxious thing in the world.
Oh, very, very much so. I was looking, so again, going into this game, I'd played previous Animal Crossings with online features that involve people coming to your island and stuff, people, or I guess at that time, village. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it wasn't very long. There wasn't this long loading airplane flying over your island, which, again, first time, cool feature. You get to see the island really quick, you know, before you land. Very cool feature. But, you know, after seeing that, you know, 32 times in one day, you know, it kind of gets old.
I'm just picturing even like I feel like you should have just timed that as part of it, you know, like have a separate timer like beforehand, just be like, all right, how fast can all eight players make it onto the island this time?
Yeah.
And then each team would get awarded a prize, whoever could do it the fastest, if the eight of them could coordinate the best.
We actually got to a point where I didn't even allow like all eight players to be on the island, just so that we could like start going through, because at some point I think before we even started, it would be like already 30-ish minutes with me just sitting there just not doing anything, because we're just like, all right, well, like, you know, this guy's loading, it's still at the way. Nobody can get to their place yet because, you know, you can't open the menu or move around. But, you know, that's, I don't know why Nintendo decided that was the thing. That's what they did.
I feel like that was one of those things where, I mean, it clearly reeks of some, however the game was designed, it was a technical limitation that forced them to do it. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't make sense at the same time, because it's like, it feels like it could be that, but it also feels like it could be like, we have this aesthetic idea that'd be really cool for players so they can feel more immersed on their island. But then they didn't realize that if they have like eight people coming to an island, their players are going to see this seven or eight times.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, shit, it's too late to go back now. We're too far along. We can't course correct.
I personally, so for this was your first Animal Crossing, so you've never really played any of the previous ones, right? Mm-mm. So
very, very, very little, if any.
The main point of Animal Crossing, at least back in the day, was it was tedious. It was meant to be very tedious. It was meant to be like these menus that were very obnoxious to like go through and stuff. And I like to think that Nintendo tried to keep that little thing throughout all their games. And I'm like, you know, I think this needs to go away now, Nintendo. And they still didn't go. It didn't go away.
There's menuing this thing called quality of life improvements.
Yeah. Menuing in New Horizon is still as bad as like any of the previous games.
That
maybe like a little better with the inventory system now, but it's still bad.
I had the same thought. I have this tendency, and it's something that I've been trying to work on now for like, well, ever. I have this character flaw where I get real hipster about games when they're really popular, and then when I try it and it doesn't live up to the hype. Mm-hmm. So I desperately, like, my emotions try to convince my brain that like this game wasn't good in the first place and you're like, everyone else is wrong and you're right. And Animal Crossing was like that for me for one of those reasons. I hated the menuing system. I hated the slow pace of it. And I still think the beginning of it, like the arbitrary wait times where it's like you might as well only play for 20 minutes and then just wait till the next day.
Yeah,
I still hate that. I think that is awful game design. But once you get to that end port, once you get to the quote unquote end game, then it's a lot more fun. Then now that everything's opened up, and even though it's one of those things where it's like I still logged over 100 hours in it, which is a lot for me. But like, and even though it wasn't, I wouldn't say it ended up being like something that held my attention for too long. Once I got to the point, I'm like, okay, I get this now. I get why this game is so popular. This is a lot of fun. And lately, and this is a controversial opinion, lately my hipster moment is with Shovel Knight. I love Shovel Knight. Hollow Knight.
Ah. Hollow Knight's great.
I don't like it. It's not even the difficulty. That's a rant for another day. That is a rant for another day. I don't want to get lost on my own tangent. So let's kind of segue, though, in a completely non sequitur way. We're going to segue using the worst transition ever. into talking about what Animal Crossing meant for you last year and like how it affected you both positively and negatively. I would assume more on the positive end, but
yeah,
you know, you never know. So how did Animal Crossing affect you last year during 2020?
So as everyone will know, 2020 was pretty much a bad time. Coronavirus was here.
Still is.
It's not going away.
Still loading. Go on.
But you know, at the time I was searching for a game to play, and one of my friends had actually reminded me, hey, you know Animal Crossing's coming out soon. And so that was something that I started looking forward to. And around that time, that's when the virus started hitting. And, you know, people starting to stay home and whatnot. And honestly, I was like kind of at this point where I was like, okay, you know, I'm going to stream Animal Crossing because this game is out. I enjoy the series a lot. There's nothing really out right now to play that I enjoy. And I'm going to make do with what's happening right now in the world. And honestly, it worked out in my favor because I was able to, one, have a ton of fun with Animal Crossing for, who knows, I think like 4 or 5 months of Animal Crossing was what, mm-hmm. how much I did. And those 4 or 5 months, I was able to play the game the way I wanted to, create a series that I enjoy, as well as take part in a lot of series that my friends have all made in their own island. And so Animal Crossing for me left like a very positive like vibe throughout most of 2020, really.
And I think that's one of the reasons I wanted to do this series, is because like I said at the beginning of the recording, I don't know how long we're going to talk about this. I don't know how this could be. We're at the 20 minute mark now. I have no idea if we're going to go on even further, but like I wanted to kind of talk about this because games have this amazing thing. Like music, games are a universal language, even though, you know, they're translated into multiple ones, but mm-hmm. gameplay is a universal language that can resonate and like lift people up. And I feel like if you just had the cartridge of Animal Crossing New Horizons, you wouldn't understand how important it was to so many people last year. Like, did you celebrate any birthdays or like events in it other than just streaming? Did you meet up with friends for stuff like that? I know some people did. If you didn't, no, of course, and then this question kind of doesn't make any sense.
I kind of did, because the cool part about it was at the time, my family, my cousins, not really super into games like me. They're into other things. They all recently got Switches, mm-hmm. and they all got Animal Crossing. And so they watched my stream and they're like, oh, you do obstacle course. I want to check it out. I want to try it out. And so I, you know, off stream, they would just do the courses. We would hang out on my island, go to their island, see what they decorated. I think one of my cousins has a concert hall because they're really into music.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And so it was like a really cool little thing where we were able to connect further in something that I like, I guess. So it was cool.
Well, it, because you couldn't see anybody, you got to see them, sort of.
Pretty much, yeah.
You know, it was, I don't know. This game, it's strange for me because I like it, and yet I don't find myself wanting to play it all that often. But at the same time, it was like, it reminded me back when you were a kid, and you were kind of on the playground and you talked with other people about games, and it was kind of like that. Even though it wasn't exactly like that, it kind of had that same vibe, you know?
I feel that, yeah.
Well, yeah, I think that's all the questions I really have for you. David, thank you so much for joining me on this. This was a short thing, and I'm going to, like I was telling you off mic, I wasn't quite sure the whole format of this, so there's probably going to be some other content creators that you're all going to hear after this. But for everyone who has not seen your stuff, where can the good people find you online? What's your Twitch handle? What's your social media? All that good stuff.
You can find me pretty much anywhere. Oh, hey, it's David. / Oh, hey, it's David on everything, pretty much. That's pretty much where you'll find me. I stream pretty much almost every day. I try to stream every day. And yeah, just follow me on social media, Twitter, all those things, good things. And thank you again for having me here.
Dude, thank you for coming on. All right, and so on to a new tale from a new island. Joining me now are Brian and Joe from the Taste of Dragons podcast. Brian, you may remember from just a couple weeks ago, did the Final Fantasy VI episode, but now he's here with another fellow dragon, Joe. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing great. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, doing pretty great. Thanks for having me on again. Appreciate it.
Thank you guys for coming on. So I wanted to have you guys on because on your podcast, you have a segment called Turnip for What, which is somewhat weekly. It was weekly for a long while, but now it's kind of like every so often you have updates with it where it's performed as like a weather report for I think it's your island, right, Joe?
Yeah. What had happened originally was we were sitting down and we were all getting really hyped about playing Animal Crossing. Originally, the dragons were all going to do like this big party with all of our friends. We were all going to bring our Switches. We were going to play together. And then, you know, horribleness of last year happened and everybody separated. And within a week or two of having the game, we were all telling each other, like, the weather's like this, the turnips are like that. We had Facebook groups where we were like, here's the turnips in my town. Come and get this crafting thing from this one person in my town. Here's the quadrant that they're in. You know, this person's birthday is happening. Come over. And we decided we wanted to kind of put that out there in the ether in like a video form. So Manda, fellow dragon, and myself, and I believe Troy also did one or two. We decided weekly we were going to do this thing called Turnip for What. And it was a literal anything goofy we found that was happening in town, any of the holidays that were about to happen, if it was certain characters' birthdays. We had a friend who was making like obstacle courses on their island. So we were doing like updates of this obstacle course island that she would do once a month. Okay. She'd have a big party. So Turnip for What's were like a ridiculous 1 minute. Here's what's going on in Animal Crossing this week across the world.
Yeah, it was an excuse to still talk about Animal Crossing weekly on the podcast without the podcast just turning into an Animal Crossing cast.
Yeah.
Because it was for about 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, but that's all we were talking about. I was like, listen, I love this. This is great. This is especially for this time. But we do have to talk about other things, and this is a nice excuse to do it.
We needed it.
We needed it.
I completely forgot about that aspect of Animal Crossing during 2020. I did the same thing. I had a Discord with a group of friends. I literally joined their Discord because they're like, yeah, this is where we're talking about all the different turnip prices for all of our different islands. And playing all the different socks. And for those who have not played Animal Crossing, one, I'm actually surprised you've gotten this far into the episode without playing it.
Sure, yeah.
It's the turnips are essentially like stocks or stonks if you follow the memes, where you can buy turnips from this vendor that shows up only on Sundays, and you buy a certain amount of turnips from her on. Yeah, you buy a certain amount of turnips, you buy as many as you want, and she has a specific set price, and then you can sell them at any point throughout the week. But at the end of the week, if you have not sold them from the week, they just turn to mush. They go rotten, and you can't do anything with them. The stocks go volatile. And so you have to pick and choose when you want to sell. And the thing is, though, is that your store changes its buying price in the morning and in the afternoon. Every single day. The only day you cannot sell these turnips is on Sunday. And what the purpose of communicating with everyone is, you can see whose island is selling for the cheapest. And then there's literally websites, turnip calculator websites, that you can plug in how much you bought your turnips for, and it gives you all the possibilities of like, or probabilities of patterns of your sell price of the sale prices, how high or low you can sell them throughout the week. And as you go through the week, you can see like what days your turnips could peak, or unfortunately maybe even bottom out. Maybe you have a negative trend and you don't really know. So generally I notice that the turnips peak usually on Thursdays, Wednesdays or Thursdays, or maybe Fridays,
yeah. Like
one of those 3 days. It's never Monday or Tuesday, very seldom Saturday. It's almost Mondays through Fridays. Wednesdays through the Fridays. And I would say Thursdays specifically are the most common. From what I remember, I haven't done anything with turnips. I haven't logged into my Animal Crossing island probably in 4 months. So I like that you guys have this, like, Turnip for What. One is a great name, but two, I completely forgot about that aspect of this, where you literally would talk with friends, and there's coordinated efforts on this turnip price thing.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever hear of Turnip Exchange?
Yes. We had friends that were very avid. Like, we were, so Dragons Wise and our friend group, it went from being about 12 of us who were all 3,000 Brigaders, and we were all super into Animal Crossing. We were like counting down the days for the game to come out to do this party, like I said. And then it kind of wound up in that first week. Since we couldn't have the party, we turned it into a Facebook group, and there was 12 of us, and then there was 20 of us, and then there was 30 of us. And by the end of the first month, there was 300 of us in this group. Oh, and it was everybody's friends of friends. So the cool thing about it was that it really was like 6 degrees of separation. You never knew who you were talking to, really, but you kind of knew them from this person to that person. And like, everybody really did like lend a hand. And because the world was shut down and no one could really go out and see people, it became like a really cool way to interact. Like, cause you interacted in the morning and at night, every time the crafts changed, every time the turnip market changed, someone would pop in and go, turnip prices for today. What is everybody at? Here's where it is on my island. And my island was Katsusando. I never had a spike. Not once. And like the entire like 8 months where everybody was on it.
Wow.
I never had a spike. But Manda, she got a spike in like the second week of the game, which is still to this day the highest spike anyone's island. Her turnips went to like 690 something. Wow. It was insane.
Yeah. Right.
And so, and she created, because everyone was so feverish at this point, she actually created an Excel spreadsheet. She asked everybody what time of the day they'd be coming in so she could max out the ability to be able to get people in and out. She put up fences. She made little signs. And we were all like, this is the best thing ever. And like, we were all running into each other on her island, like saying hello and then getting out so somebody else could come in. It was like the coolest part of the idea of the stock market, the stonks, if you will. It was like the best part of that kind of a thing. And you're making bells like crazy. So, I mean, then you go spend your bells. It was great.
It's raining bells. It's got to be very loud. That would have to be very loud.
It's got to hurt too.
Yeah. Oh my god. So what else did you guys? We were talking a lot off mic. We were talking off mic about some of the other stuff you guys were doing, like you threw parties in Animal Crossing. What other events did you guys hold on your islands?
Sure. So we actually had Troy from the Taste of Dragons podcast. He actually had his birthday inside the game. Really? Since we weren't able to get together, he actually set up his entire island as a birthday place with mini games that we could all do, a place we could all set up and take a picture with. But he was there, like he had like two set times. Like if he couldn't be there this one time, the party was still going to be held until a certain other time. But if he couldn't make it in the morning, he could definitely make it at this other time and meet up with everybody else. And so... It was very interesting. So we all like celebrated it, and we did all these other things. Like it was the first birthday from our friend group during the pandemic, and we all celebrated at Animal Crossing, and we all got to see each other in quotation marks and interact with one another. We were all on voice chat as well, so we were all interacting. It was great.
It was really fun.
That's really cool. I didn't get to do anything like that, but I like hearing those stories of people getting to have events that should have been in person, but could not have been in person. And I feel like this game was so instrumental with doing that. Like, what is it? The one podcast, they're no longer running anymore, but Warp World, the people who actually did Turnip Exchange, they for a long while, they would all meet up in Animal Crossing and record a video, like stream them all in Animal Crossing instead of the webcams. It was just all their Animal Crossing personas. They set up a whole podcast studio in the one person's house where they could all sit down and make it look like a talk show studio. And I'm that's actually really freaking cool. I like that a lot.
Yeah, that is awesome. We actually set up Zoom. It was just a Zoom. It's a Zoom call. So all of our pictures, you know, are on there, but it's all of us just looking down playing on our island. We're not actually like looking at each other. We're all looking down at our island
for weeks.
It was almost every single night we would do this, just cause it was our way of getting together. Cause we would get together, you know, 3 or 4 times a week, and do something with one another. And so not having a chance to do that, especially cause the week that it was going to come out, was when we really shut down as a country. And so we had an entire like pavilion set aside at a park that we were going to do an entire like huge event at, invite all of our friends, hold like actual, we were going to do games.
Oh, we had games.
We had like
prizes for
shooting
like
down balloons and everything. And then when that didn't happen, we had all of our still like prizes that we had. So we all like, so we ended up going to each other's houses, setting down a prize, and then just knocking on the door and running away.
Yeah.
And so that's what we did with them because that's all we could do with them.
Wait, did you create competitions in Animal Crossing for people to win those prizes? That's what it was? Okay.
It was both. It was real life and an Animal Crossing. But because the game wasn't out yet, we couldn't actually tell you how we were going to do it. We just knew certain aspects of the other games were involved in this one. Like the slingshot, when I, mind you, had we now knowing what we know, we never would have been able to play any game on day one. It wouldn't have been possible because you start with just that small piece of your island and you don't even have the pogo stick to be able to get off that part of your island. So there, it would have been impossible to play any game inside the game itself. But we had plenty of things we could have done outside of the game. And it was really fun. Like we were also the big party house. Like we're the ones that usually throw all the big parties for 4th of July and for like Halloween, for Turkey Day. We have a big picnic we do after Thanksgiving. And it was really rough not being able to do those things, but Animal Crossing super helped us with some of that. Like for Halloween, we have a friend who made his island like haunted. He had like 8 different haunted areas of his island, and he made like a murder forest with like blood drops coming out of it. And when you went into the forest, you couldn't actually see yourself anymore because the trees were so dense. And he made it so that like when you would bump into things, if you changed the angle, it would be like a skeleton is what you bumped into, but you could only see like the hand or the head of the skeleton. It was phenomenal. His island was insane. He had his 4 houses, and one of his houses was like a seance house that was all ghosts and stuff, like just creepy, weird, dark, everything.
Can you buy more than one house?
Yeah, you have to create another character. He had 3 characters.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I think he had 4.
I didn't know you could do that. That makes a lot more sense now.
Yeah, he did the multiple characters thing, and like it was amazing. Like amazing. Like his Halloween was so fun. Like all of our friends got together and we went to each friend's house. Like, and we streamed this actually last year because we wanted all of our friends on Twitch to be able to join us too, because a lot of them were our friends we would see in real life. Mm-hmm. And like one of our friends made a pumpkin patch that was forever. Like half her entire island was pumpkin patch. So we just kind of ran through pumpkin patches and stuff and took a bunch of pictures. And like we all dealt with Jack, the Skeleton King. It was very fun. Yeah. The Pumpkin King, not the Skeleton King. It was so fun. And like we did, us girls all got together in Obi's and Yukata's for fireworks day.
Because
we couldn't shoot off fireworks, we couldn't do anything party wise. I couldn't barbecue. So like we all decided we were going to get together when the firework festival was happening in Animal Crossing. So all the girls got together and we were all wearing yukatas and we took pictures on each other's islands with the fireworks.
That's so cool.
It was really cute. I think Troy did actually join us for that too.
He did. he did join you. Yeah, he was wearing a yukata. He's like, I'm part of the girls.
It was so cute. Walking
throughout the island. But yeah, no, Animal Crossing was definitely a surrogate for a lot of events that we would normally do. And it definitely kept a lot of us sane, especially at the very beginning of the whole lockdown. And yeah, it was a godsend. It was great.
Yeah.
I didn't get to do a lot of stuff like that, which is kind of like one of the reasons I wanted to do this also, besides the whole historical context and preservation stuff, is like I kind of want to live vicariously through other people's stories on Animal Crossing. I mean, well, that's super vicarious, right? Living like I want to have your video game lives. but no, what I did do, for me, it helped me reconnect with friends from high school that I haven't talked to in a couple of years. And I had spoken to them, you know, numerous times after high school, but we're always so on and off that I didn't speak to them for like probably a solid like year or two, just, you know, drifting apart, not any particular reason. So it helped me reconnect. Those were the friends that I did all the turnip exchange stuff with. Well, not turnip exchange, but all the you know, checking stock turnip market prices and stock, the stonks. Yeah. The stock market.
yeah.
Is what the game calls it. You ever, this is completely off topic. Who's the turnip lady? May, Miss Daisy May? No.
Sal Jones. Jones is the name of the older woman, and her granddaughter is May, Daisy May. I think it's Daisy May.
Yeah, I think it's Daisy May.
Is it?
Yeah.
she kind of looks like she reminds, doesn't she have like a drool or a booger dripping down her face?
Yeah,
or something
she
like
does.
That, right? It always reminded me of the one random kid at the beginning of Wind Waker. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah.
It looks Waker, just like that.
Yeah. It really
that kid
does. You're absolutely
the shit
right.
out of me. That kid, he just waddles around and that fucking booger yeah. is like swinging. Like it looks like he
gross.
Could like kill bugs with that thing.
What?
Just
you're not wrong.
That game was filled with like kind of gross characters. There's that also on, I think it's Windfall Island. That's the island with the auction house, I believe. There's
yes.
like
yes.
one of the guys who, one of the dads who whose daughter goes missing, who was kidnapped by
yeah,
Ganon.
By the Great Baloo, yeah.
It's not by the Great Baloo. That's the dragon dude, but one of the
oh,
many
that's the dragon. At the end. Is that
yeah.
the dragon on Windfall, or is that dragon on?
That's the
dragon,
dragon
Roost.
On Dragon Roost. The Great.
Okay,
Baloo.
There we go. Baloo. What was the name of the thing on the in Ganon's
I
Fortress?
Forget. He was a bird. It was a bird.
Yeah,
thing.
Right.
It wasn't
it
a dragon.
Was
I forget what it's called.
It's gonna drive me insane. I'm gonna find out.
Every time that you talk to him, he'd be like, "Hey, could you help me?" And if you go no, he goes this ear piercing like sound. Every single time. I know it has nothing to do with Animal Crossing, but I literally went from like, doesn't Daisy May have drool coming out of it, to the gross drool kid from Wind Waker, to then the old man that squeals like a pig or something on
yeah.
Windfall Island. It's so weird. It's also
it
funny. I quote Beetle all the time to my wife, and she's not a gamer, so she's always very confused when I go, oh, thank you, bye bye.
We have from that game during the what is it, the battleship game, you have Kaboom or you have Kersploosh, and so we used to convey whether we did something good or not. It would just be like, man, you nailed that, Kaboom, or if it was like, man, that was a definite curse sploosh there. That was not good.
I can only imagine like people not understanding that, the context of that. And so like, right. they're out in public going like, oh man, nice Kaboom, bro. Yeah. And the guy's like,
I am sure
it's so
people
specific.
Were like, what the fuck is wrong with those two? Like,
what a weird ass couple. Kaboom. I love it. That dude's so disinterested in everything. It's such
he
a great
really
character.
Is. It's a great character.
You've never seen a character convey so much with so little.
Right?
Yeah.
but back to Animal Crossing, you mentioned that you met up with some people you hadn't seen in like years, right? Some mm-hmm. childhood friends. We actually did have the same thing. Like the person who is on our podcast now, Hassel, we hadn't heard from him in years, really. He had moved to like California, and to do like his old Apple thing, and or work at Apple, I should say. And so we hadn't heard from him in years. And so we had started up, you know, this Animal Crossing group, like we said, with Zoom and everything. And so we're all in Zoom, we're all chatting, having a great time. This is night one, and you know, chatting it up. And then all of a sudden we hear out of nowhere, "What's up, nerds?" And we all like, "What?" We look up and it's him. It's his cell. And we're like, oh my God.
What are you doing here?
He's like, well, I got an invite and I'm in. So Animal Crossing started our reconnection with him.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Which has culminated in him being on our podcast now. And he's come down, he's visited us, we visited him again. So like, Animal Crossing is a reason why we are back in and such good friends with Hassel. And it's amazing.
Yeah. Animal Crossing did a lot for us last year.
Yeah.
Well, and you still play it a decent amount still, right, Joe?
Yes, I do.
I don't know how you find time to play all. You're an avid Pokemon Go player, and you're
yes.
an avid Animal Crossing player, as well as staying on top of all the other games and media that you intake. I don't know how you do it, man.
I have
working
insomnia.
A full-time job.
I have insomnia. It helps a lot.
That's
Animal
one way
Crossing,
of putting it.
Yeah, it helps a lot. I'm very productive because I can't sleep. Animal Crossing is a lot easier now. Like the last time I was in where I was in for like over an hour, like because up until maybe literally like Valentine's Day, I think this year was the last time I was like, okay, I play every day for a few hours. Now it's like I pick it up, it's 15, 20 minutes. I do my chores. I say hi to Marshall. I wait for the day that Static shows up in my island and I can bring him home because he's my favy. But like I Tanabata was the last day this year so far. It was only a week or two ago where I was like in for more than an hour, and I was like, wow, I love Tanabata. This is such a, it's such a great holiday. So I always want to, I want to enjoy the holidays that like I, I would wish I could be in Japan for, or like cherry blossom season. I was in every day for a few hours just because I really like, Brian and I used to go to Japan during cherry blossom season each year for the last like 6-7 years. So like it was very kind of like being home again, like being able to go, like I can still enjoy the things I like, even if it's digitally. And it's such a cute game, and you can hang out with your friends. It's just, I just love it.
When my kid gets older, I'm going to have to get either you or some of my other friends to be our guides through Japan, because I've been wanting to go to Japan for as long as I can remember. And it's just, it's never been in the budget, and it's just something I would love to go. So like seeing the cherry blossoms there, I've been to cherry blossom festivals in my area. There's some like,
they're beautiful.
I've been to the one in Philly. I've never gone to the one in DC. The DC one's huge.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, DC's is monstrous. You could go to the Brooklyn one, is amazing too. That one's really? Like, yeah, really, really, oh, nice. It's beautiful. The Brooklyn Botanical Gardens, gorgeous. And they have giant cherry blossom trees. It's I haven't been to DC's, but I've seen pictures of DC's. DC's Haname looks much more like Japanese Haname, only it doesn't, like there is nobody sitting below the trees. Like it's mostly just walking. Whereas in Japan, the idea is you're sitting underneath everything. You're sitting out, like letting the cherry blossoms snow their beautiful magic upon you.
Cherry blossoms are normally pink, right? Just to make sure. Like the white petals.
White and pink.
White. We had, I don't know if we actually had a legit one. At my house growing up, we had a beautiful, big, old cherry blossom tree. And it was like in the spring, our entire driveway was pink. Because there was petals everywhere. And
a couple other trees that are just like them. Peach blossoms and apricot blossoms and plum blossoms look a lot like cherry blossoms too. And they all bloom at different points of the year. If yours were in the spring, it probably was a cherry blossom tree.
It did. It was a spring tree. Unfortunately, it was also very much rotted out at some point. So the trunk was pretty bad, but like it would still bloom every spring, like a lot. So my parents cut it down. I'm still sad about it because like it was such a beautiful tree, and it was the best climbing tree. Like the trunk was super thick. giggity. It was a really great climbing tree though, and it was like it was just so peaceful to like sit under. It was one of my favorite things. So I'm always kind of bummed when it's like I don't, and every time I've gone to the Philly one, they have a cherry blossom festival specifically, but it's always in like March and they're never bloomed at all. It's cold still. I'm like, why do you keep doing this?
They probably have to get the permits from the city so soon that they can't even tell what the weather patterns are going to be like. We've tried to plan trips in the past where the idea was that we were there long enough to where even if a cold snap happened early or a warm, like a heat wave came through early, there's somewhere in Japan that will have cherry blossoms. So we could either go real south or real north and we'll find it somewhere. But like usually it's the end of March, like early April.
Yeah.
That's nuts. All right. So what, any other stories you have, any other tales from your islands that you would like to share with the listeners here?
No, I think for me, it was murder. We called it Murder Island, which was Zach's
Island.
Yeah. And that was, God, that's, it was just, oh, and you know, okay. That's so true. One thing that Joe did do, that I do want to touch on is, Joe, like she said, we normally go to Japan every single year and we couldn't. We went earlier in the year last year. We actually went in February.
We got really lucky.
We lucked out.
We got
right
lucky
that before we were able everything home. Locked down.
Wow.
Days before. So when we got back, though, we were missing Japan during cherry blossom season. So Joe made her entire island, or at least a specific portion of her island, like an alley that we would walk down while we're in Japan. And so she made it so that it was like super cramped.
Yeah, I made Kyoto side streets with cherry blossom trees and stuff.
Yeah, she like built up like the side buildings or whatever.
Yeah, I made it so there was three tiered with things on top of the third tier so that it felt like you were walking down one of the small alleyways that had like little shops and little, a whole lot of Tanabata trees and like really cool bamboo things.
Did you have to raise the land? You couldn't actually build buildings because you can only like, you can select house placements, but like that doesn't
The houses.
Okay.
If you, certain items you can use, and if you built the land up, like your terrain up, and then you put stalls on it, and then if you put stone things in front of the stalls or behind them or trees or different types of flowers, it would cover and make it look like it was a stall, just like on another building, like above it. It was really cool. And I could change all the stall designs. So like I changed a bunch of them to be like ramen shops and like all sorts of weird things like that. It was fun.
That's really freaking cool. What I love about New Horizons is how much customization there is, like availability there is. But that's also what I hate about it, because they gatekeep so much of it. And it's weird, because when I first started playing this game, and I guess it's kind of weird to even say this on an episode devoted to a game that I do enjoy and that I deem super important, especially because of what it did for people during 2020. I really hated it when I first started playing it, because I can understand why it appeals to some people, but the fact that there is arbitrary barriers, that arbitrary timed barriers to progress, is bullshit, in my opinion. Absolute bullshit. Now, in the game's defense, and completely negating my own opinion on that, in the game's defense, it's meant to be, you play for 20 minutes a day and then you put it down, and then you pick it up again the next day and you play for another 20 minutes, you get what you need to do, and then you put it down. It's literally meant to be a pick up and play experience. But I argue that games are a lot more than pick up and play experiences now, and people want to be able to sit down for more than 20 minutes and play a game. Phone games are very different. Phone games are meant to be 5-minute experiences. That's very different. When you play for 20 minutes, you've already basically allotted half of an hour at that point. And at that point, you might as well just go on and play for a full hour. But once at a certain point in that game, all you can really do is just chop wood, gather fruit, and sell it. And there's not much more you can do until you can find the items that you want. So while I love the game, I just got to a point where it's like, there's nothing interesting left to do. Like, I don't want to just come back here and do chores, for the sake of doing chores. Like I do like the game, and I like everything that you can do in it, but I dislike the arbitrary gatekeeping within the game. It's a real problem I have with it. And I can't even say that like that's objectively a bad thing. It's just, from my viewpoint, it's a really stupid idea, because it disincentivizes people from playing more than 5 minutes.
Yeah. And I understand what you mean. However, us in the West, we play a lot different than they do, or at least the concept of playing, than they do in Japan. So this is a very Japanese game. So in Japan, they all have their full-time jobs, however long they work. And video games really are meant to be played for like an hour before they go to sleep or before they eat or something like that. It's kind of like a bedtime story. Like Dragon Quest is meant to be played like an hour at a time, even though Dragon Quest games are huge RPGs that, you know, last for whatever, you know, 40 hours. They're meant to be played like in small bites. That's why you can save at certain points. That's why you can do certain things. So for them, again, this is a very Japanese game, so that's just how they play games over there. Or at least, you know, the concept of this game was meant for that. So it's like, so you can still progress, even if you only can allot 20 minutes to play this or an hour to play this. You can still progress and still have a great time no matter when you sign on. But yeah, it's definitely, because it is now blown up, especially this last one, and has gotten a lot more exposure in the West. It's interesting to see where it goes, but I still think it'll be a very Japanese game going forward.
It's funny, because even though I have those issues, and it makes me actually upset even now just thinking about it, I don't want them to change it, because I feel like that's fundamentally an important, like, I feel like those are my opinions that I just said, and how upset I am about how much it gatekeeps. I don't think that's a bad decision, because I feel like, especially as Americans in our culture, it's good to have something that intentionally limits itself to us, where we can't just consume. Mm-hmm. Not trying to get on a pedestal and talk about, like, you know, like capitalism, consumer culture and bullshit like that. We're not going into that, but like, it, there is something to be said though, where like, that is a very American thing. Like, we have streaming services where we can pick whatever the fuck we want, whenever we want. Like, we're very much oriented to, like, we just want to keep consuming. And actually, in thinking of like the Japanese cultural experience and how they intake media versus us, got me thinking, have either of you guys ever heard of a book called Pure Invention?
No, I haven't.
I think both of you guys would really like it. I have not read this personally, so I heard about it on a podcast, and I trust the opinions of the podcasters. It's Retronauts. It's basically, it's a book, and this is, I'm looking at the cover right now, How Japan Made the Modern World. And a lot of it talks about like how things were designed for Japan that for some reason just really translated well over in the West. So for example, Game & Watch or Game Boy, a lot of Tamagotchi even, like, mm-hmm. those, like, a lot of, they talk about it on the episode of Retronauts that the author Matt Alt is on, but how in Japan, especially the vast majority of people live near Tokyo because that's the biggest city, and you know, it's the most highly densely populated city. But even, you know, you go down to Kyoto and whatnot, and like,
you can, I mean, yeah, there's giant cities. There's Osaka, Kyoto, Sapporo. Mm-hmm. There's tons of big, Sendai. There's a lot of places that are big.
But there's a lot. It's commuter culture. It's a lot, like, you know, mm-hmm. public transport is much more, is a much bigger of a thing than it is here. And so Tamagotchi, specifically, they mentioned Tamagotchi, is really designed for that culture because you have nothing to do while you're waiting on a train to go places. So you bring your Tamagotchi out, you feed your digital pet, and then you put it back. Tamagotchi, it's interesting how it, like, they talk about how it took off in the US, mainly in cities at first, and then spread out to the suburbs. But it wasn't as popular in suburbs because we drive everywhere in the suburbs. So it's like, we can't be checking our Tamagotchi, and you're not sitting at home checking your Tamagotchi. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if it's talked about in the book, but on the episode, they talk about how even like a lot of the cultural problems in Japan are now starting to appear in the US, like young people not being able to find work, the whole shut-in generation that Japan had an issue with. Now it's kind of, you know, people live with their parents much longer now because they can't afford to move out, or they can't find a job because we're overeducated and underpaid. And now this is getting into another luxury thing. I'm not trying to go into that, but they talk a lot about the bizarre parallels, and especially considering that Japan went from total, almost near total annihilation after the nuclear bomb in World War II, to then surpassing the US in a lot of elements, and kind of like what we're experiencing culturally in the US, maybe minus all the whole political situation we have going on. But I mean, maybe they did. I have no idea. I don't know what the political scene is over there. But
it was a lot like ours about 4 or 5 years ago.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Actually, it was probably for the last 10 or so years, I want to say.
It's a lot longer than that. They're very nationalist.
Yeah.
So, wow, so they don't allow people really to immigrate for the most part over there. Their country is more than 97% Japanese.
Yeah. There's like only like 2.1% or something is anything other than Japanese, but 1.9% of that is other Asian cultures.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's fast. Learn some.
Wow. My stats are from last year, so they may have changed. Just for that.
But still, that's more than I know. But yeah, it just thinking about how Animal Crossing, just to tie Animal Crossing back into kind of this nebulous conversation we're having about cultural differences between Japan and the U.S. I didn't even think about it, how the new Animal Crossing was designed with a much more Japanese sensibility in mind, and it makes sense. Like, I didn't even think of it that way. So yeah, if you guys are interested, Pure Invention by Matt Ault is the book. It's not even just video games. Like, they talk about the NES, of course, because that was obviously really big, but like the Sony Walkman. And they even mentioned how like one of the interesting points, and I don't know if it's in the book, but they talk about it on the episode, is that the Walkman was such a revolutionary thing because at the time, you know, everyone's so packed together on the subway stations. Like, you're living in this shared space and you have nothing for yourself. And Walkmans kind of gave people a sense of personal space because they could listen to what they wanted to and block out the outside noise. And that's why it also translated well over to the US, because we have cities as well with a lot of public transportation and people having to share a very big but still condensed common space and not a lot of space with it because there's millions and millions and millions of people living in it. So it's a really, from everything that I read or listened to in that episode, I want to read this book because it just sounds super interesting.
That's awesome.
But anyway, so yeah, we went off the deep end on that last part of it. So, that should do it. I think though, I think this is a good way to cut off. So before I let you guys go, is there anything you guys want to plug?
Just the podcast and our stream, Taste of Dragons podcast. And then on Twitch, we're at Taste of Dragons. We do Twitch, I think about 4 days a week now. We've cut back a little bit, but our podcast, we still come out every single Sunday.
All right.
These are true things.
All right. Well, that should do it for then. So guys, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
But yeah, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. If you want to email me, you can email me stillloadingcontact@gmail.com. If you want to support the show, you can do that in a number of ways. And probably the best and easiest way for you would be to give it a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcasting app you use. That helps more people find the show. If you want to support it monetarily, you can go to patreon.com/stillloadingpod. Even just $1 a month will help grow the show. And the most important shout out I have is the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to put video games and video game consoles in the hands of children receiving inpatient care at hospitals. So if you want to check them out and consider donating, go to bitbybitfoundation.org. And that will do it for this episode of Still Loading, and I will see you all next time.